This podcast is brought to you by DeMarini. Are you ready to join the uprising? More than 150 programs around the nation have, including back-to-back Division I and II national champions, Oregon State and Tampa, and Division III national champion Keene. Log on to DeMarini.com/DNation and check out the Voodoo Minus 3 to see why the SC3 alloy is the most powerful and durable performance alloy on the market. It gives you the pop you need to go long because chicks don't dig the ground ball. The uprising, coming to a ballpark near you. Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. College style, along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. I think this is my favorite part of the week, Aaron. We get done with a contentious top 25 meeting, as it is every week. And then everybody calms down, we come back to the podcast nook, and we chit-chat a little college baseball. I really do enjoy it. I hope people enjoy it as well.
Well, John, I think you and I were actually on the same page in the meeting for the most part today, which is
upset
a little bit
city.
Unusual.
That is upset city.
We'll see if we can bring that harmony to the podcast.
Signs point to no, but let's go right to the top, and we'll, of course, take your emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com. That's the email address, and always happy to take those comments, questions, thoughts, what have you. Aaron, let's start right up at the top of the podcast, at the top of the poll, I should say. Three ACC teams remain in our top four. So we've got Miami at number one, Florida State, woo! At number three, at 31-3 overall for the season, and North Carolina 29-7. I think these three teams have a couple things in common. First of all, they're all in the ACC. Second of all, they all swept ACC series on the road this weekend, Aaron. Mm-hmm. And there's a little status quo, but Miami goes to Georgia Tech, obviously a traditional power. Obviously a horrible weekend at Georgia Tech when they found their teammate, Michael Hutz, found dead in his dorm room, I believe it was, dorm room or apartment,
right, on
Friday afternoon. So Friday's game postponed. Just can't imagine what that team is going through. And obviously our thoughts and condolences go out to Danny Hall, and Coach Danny Hall, and the players on that team and the entire Georgia Tech community.
And just a quick aside there, John,
yeah.
I heard a report from a scout who was there on Friday when they found out the news. And, you know, it just seemed like everyone was just completely stunned, as you might imagine. And the players were all, you know, kind of in a daze trying to still warm up and trying to figure out what to do. And,
right.
You know, you could see players with just, you know, tears streaming down their cheeks. And it was really, it sounded like a very emotional, very, very sad scene.
Just not something 19, 20, 21-year-olds are supposed to deal with. So the fact that Georgia Tech and Miami played the series, you know, I guess you kind of hats off. Really, they're being pros about it, basically. Remember when Daryl Kyle died? I mean, the Cardinals, you know, Major League Baseball seemed like it stopped almost for a day. You know, this is similar circumstances, really, for Georgia Tech. So, our thoughts and go out to that ball club. And then, for Miami to still kind of compartmentalize that, just go out and play, take care of their business, again, be pros about it, really. Florida State to go on the road, win a couple close games with Boston College, and then wipe things out on Saturday. I think those were a Friday doubleheader, then a Saturday game. And then North Carolina to do something it had never done, go and win a series at Clemson, not just win it, sweep it. What's the most impressive of those for you, Aaron, between Miami, Florida State, and North Carolina? What jumped out the most to you from that ACC weekend? Was it an individual performance or a team performance?
Well, I mean, you know, like you said, all three of them are impressive. I thought North Carolina might have a little bit more trouble at Clemson just because I do believe Clemson is a pretty solid, talented team, and boy, they've been struggling lately. I think they've lost about eight in a row now.
It's not a typical Clemson team this year.
It's not.
Very young, and they've still got
so much pitching, and they were at home where they've been much better this year than they've been on the road. I think they
were
14-5 at home going into this weekend. And North Carolina has never won at Clemson.
I thought that was a really good upset pick. But Clemson is now 18-17 overall. That's just shocking. You just don't see that.
And you know, in our regional projection last week, John, we still picked Clemson as a number two seed, mostly purely on projection because we looked at the remaining schedule and we said, you know, I could see them winning every one of these remaining series, and that included North Carolina.
Right.
But, boy, you get swept by North Carolina.
They've lost nine straight now.
I mean, nine straight. Clemson's in trouble, John. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
And North Carolina, just give those guys a lot of credit. They've got a good club, and they're playing well. They've played very consistent all year long. They haven't, I don't think, been quite the overwhelming juggernaut that we've seen from Arizona State in the first half and Miami and Florida State.
Yeah, those three teams ahead of them have combined for 10 losses,
right.
And North Carolina has seven on its own. Yet, like you're saying, North Carolina's
so consistency.
And Alex
White is, to me, one of the key things for them. He has I think, been very, very solid the last three or four starts especially. Really, he's been very good all year, but especially lately, he's been outstanding, really becoming that true ace, one of the best Friday guys in the country, I think, which is what they hoped he would be.
Absolutely. He was supposed to be one of the top sophomores in the country this year, and he's evolving into that. Now, we should take a step aside from the poll real quick and preview three strikes coming at BaseballAmerica.com. The real story of the weekend, really, there were two stories on Friday night that we should talk about. I can't believe we didn't go over this in the pre-show, but that's just me.
they'll be covered in some detail in strikes.
I thought there was a pre-show. The top college right-hander for the 2008 draft, Aaron Crow, gets lit up in some ways on Friday, still wins in a wild and woolly 31-12 Missouri victory over Texas. But Crow's 42 2/3 scoreless inning streak comes to an ignominious end. And then Steven Strasburg, Hoochie Mama, 23 strikeouts, the most in NCAA Division I play since Neil Heaton in 1981. This is just, that is crazy. It's the opposite of terrible. Steven Strasburg vaulting past the likes of Alex White and Missouri's Kyle Gibson to the top of draft board for 2009. Yeah. Which is the bigger story for you, Strasburg's 23 strikeout, one hit shutout for San Diego State, or Crow getting hammered and still getting the win for Missouri?
And the other big thing in that Missouri game was Jacob Priday.
Oh,
four
gosh.
Home runs and nine RBIs. That's a Big 12 record, four home runs in one game.
I think he was sneaking in some minus five bats into that one. Jacob Priday. That's
what
crazy.
I'm not exactly sure which one bulged my eyes more when I checked on Friday night. I think it was probably Strasburg. But wow, I mean, you don't expect to look at a Texas score and see 31-12. I mean, I checked that game in the first couple of innings, and it was, I think, 9-0 Texas. I'm thinking, wow, so much for that.
Yeah.
You come back later and see 31-12. I mean, this is Texas we're talking about. You definitely don't expect to see that. But I can't ever remember, John, reading about a better college baseball performance than Steven Strasburg, 23 Ks at a one-hit shutout.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. And we can segue there right into Texas and Missouri. Texas loses the series to Missouri. 2 out of 3. It's on the road. Missouri jumps up to number 6 again. And the Tigers have been in our top 10 all year, 25-9. Only 7-5 in the Big 12, but they are 6-2 against top 25 teams. Regain a little momentum this weekend. I think we really believe in their pitching and their defense, and they have shown offensive ability. I mean, they scored 44 runs in two games.
They've got some legit
Texas
power bats in that lineup, John, with Aaron Senne and Jacob Priday. And, you know, Ryan Lawless can hit for power. He hasn't really done so. They're getting some home runs from Steve Gray. I mean, this is – I think people look at this, and when I saw them in the first – I guess the second weekend of the season, they kind of struck me as a West Coast-style team.
Right.
And I think they are, but I don't think they're like a Long Beach kind of West Coast team. I think they're more like a Cal State Fullerton from this year, West Coast team, because they've got, like Fullerton, they've got some power bats in there.
Yeah.
They're going to manufacture runs. They're not going to, you know, offense isn't going to be their calling card, but they're not a bad offensive team at all.
No, they've shown the ability to be productive, and they've been pretty consistent. Had a couple little speed bumps there, and that's why we dropped them down to 8, but obviously impressive for them to win a series against Texas, because that's their... we thought coming into the season, Missouri, Baylor, Texas, the top three teams in the league. Now Nebraska loses a series to Oklahoma State, so Nebraska falls down to 9. Texas losing that series, we dropped them all the way down to 20. Aaron, behind Oklahoma State, which had an impressive series win again against Nebraska. Nebraska's first series loss since the first weekend of the year when they lost to Stanford. And then Texas A&M jumps into the rankings. I should say back in. They were a preseason top 25 team. But so were Louisiana, Lafayette, and Fresno. So what does that mean?
Fresno's, I should mention, John, is coming alive.
That's good.
They won a big series against Louisiana Tech right now. And they're back over 500 at least.
Lafayette,
not so
much. We'll not talk about the Raging Cajuns for fear of angering ourselves. But A&M back in the rankings at number 19. Texas falls all the way to 20, Aaron. Explain a little bit of why Texas fell. 8 spots. For really, on paper, kind of doing what they were supposed to do, losing 2 out of 3 at Missouri.
Well, you know, I don't frankly think that Texas has been impressive at any point this year. That's the way to put it. They've been kicking around the teens in the rankings, I think, all year long, because first of all, they're Texas, and there hasn't been a lot of other teams that have been really so much more impressive than they've been. But you know what, Texas, they haven't pitched. I mean, their team ERA right now is 5.01, I think we looked at.
Yeah, no, it's 5. It's a 5.01. It's unbelievable to see a Texas team with that ERA.
And the point, actually, we were talking in the meeting today, we were comparing Texas and Ole Miss, who I think have pretty comparable overall records. I mean, Texas is
comparably disappointing this year. Neither team, I think it's safe to say traditional powers. Ole Miss certainly is not in Texas's realm.
Right.
But in the last 5 years, they've been comparable. They haven't gotten over the hump to get to Omaha, but it's a pretty doggone good program at Ole Miss.
But a couple of differences between those two teams, although Texas has played, I think, the tougher schedule, more top 25 teams, mm-hmm. Mississippi hasn't played a terrible schedule, first of all. Second of all, they're the hot team right now. They won 8 out of 9. Texas
Correct.
Is in a funk. And thirdly, you look at Texas's number one starter, Austin Wood. Would he be the number 4 starter on Mississippi? Would he be the number 5 starter? I mean, I don't know.
Would he be a
better
middle
than
reliever?
Nathan Baker, who's the number 4 guy over at Ole Miss. I mean,
he might be a middle reliever. He's been giving up a lot of home runs this year. You know, Texas is not a ballpark that plays to home runs, and Wood's given up 8 home runs in 38 innings. He's been homer prone, and he's fastball changeup lefty, and that's kind of what happens with those guys. Hey, Johan Santana's a fastball changeup lefty, and he's homer prone.
He gave up 27 last
week. Something like that. He gave up a couple this weekend. So, when you look at Texas's pitching and you see that basically outside of Chance Ruffin, the rest of the team's pitchers have all been consistently inconsistent, this is how you get a team that's ranked 20th. You match them up against Oklahoma State, very similar overall records, exactly the same conference record. Oklahoma State's 7-6 against top 25 teams, Texas 3-6.
Oklahoma State is winning series against good teams. The last 2 weeks they've beaten Nebraska and Missouri.
Yep.
What's Texas's best win, John? Texas Tech 2 out of 3?
Their best series win is that. That's the thing. Texas hasn't gotten swept, and that tells you a little bit about their mental toughness, and that's why I do think that Texas is still a top 25 team and a team that can still be dangerous in the postseason. But they have shown mental toughness, they haven't let themselves get swept. But they haven't won any of the series against the teams they've played that are better than them.
They lost at home to Stanford. They lost at home to Nebraska.
And losing the series at Missouri. There's one other top 25 series in there, top 25 caliber series. They lost. It's just not been a good season for Texas. And the thing is, I think everyone who's a Texas Longhorn fan really knows that that's true as well. So
they played a tougher schedule, John, than Texas A&M. But the Aggies, first of all, have won 13 in a row. That's the team with momentum right now.
Yes.
And second of all, you know, maybe the Aggies haven't played the best part of the Big 12 yet.
Right.
But unlike Texas, they're sweeping those series against Kansas and Kansas State and Oklahoma.
Correct. Now, that's the thing. You know, you look at both those clubs, obviously big rivals. They will end the regular season against each other, one game in Austin, two in College Station. They alternate that every year. I love the way they do that in the Big 12. Texas A&M, Baylor do that every year. But let's look at what Texas has coming up. Oklahoma State comes to town for 3. Crucial, crucial series.
Huge.
Texas is at home for that, but I got to be honest with you, Oklahoma State's looking a lot better than Texas right now.
You know what, John? They've got better pitching, and that's not something you expect from Oklahoma State, but they've got those 3 sophomores. I mean, Blandford's been a little bit shaky on Sundays, but Andrew Oliver and Tyler Lyons have been outstanding lately.
You're right, and they could use Frank Anderson back in Texas right now, taking care of their pitchers. Then you got Texas has to go to Kansas State. Kansas State's been a big disappointment, no other way to put it. We thought Kansas State was a regional team. Coming into the year, they got a couple of veterans back they didn't expect to get back. They just haven't capitalized on it. They haven't had a good year.
Byron Wiley has been one of the major disappointments in the nation. I think he's hitting like .136 last I checked.
Goo!
And I think he'd gotten benched as well. Just striking out way too much.
That's unfortunate.
Brad Hill said on Thursday, he's just not making contact. So that's a guy that I think we had it maybe even our top 100 going into the year. So that's in the discussion for biggest disappointment.
Not good. But then Texas. So Texas' last 4 series, you got Oklahoma State, certainly no gimme. At Kansas State, not an easy series, but that's the easiest series left for them. Then Baylor with that split series, 2 in Austin, 1 in Waco, and then Texas A&M. Texas is on the bubble for hosting a regional here. They've got to win, in my mind, 3 of those 4 to host a regional.
And you
it's
know what?
Not going to be easy.
You know what? Baylor is kind of lurking in the weeds right now. I mean, they haven't been great over the last month, really, but they are 8-7 in the conference. I mean, they're not in bad shape. And they just, you know, took 2 out of 3 at Kansas State this weekend. And they've gotten, again, that's a team that has better pitching. So you can, I think, project them down the road a little bit better. John Tolleson pitched wonderful this weekend. I don't know if you saw.
Just in your notes.
Complete game shutout, I believe, for Sean Tolleson on Sunday. And you know what? On Thursday, C. Smith wasn't even sure Tolleson was going to pitch because he had to come down with a little bit of tenderness in his surgically repaired elbow.
He was trying a little tenderness, like the song goes. Not usually something the pitcher should try, but what are you going to do? But A&M, you talked about the hot team. A&M's at the top of the standings in the league at 12-3 now, half game over Nebraska. The Big 12's fascinating. 13-game winning streak for the Texas Aggies. That's why they're 19. You know, if UNCW can win 21 in a row and vault into the rankings, then so can a Big 12 team. I think that's safe to say.
Sure. And again, we like Texas A&M's talent, and it's the pitching depth in particular that stands out with them because, you know, I mean, we've been saying all year we think that's going to be a factor.
And it's going to be bearing out as the season goes on. But we thought this was a six-bid team league going in, Aaron, and there's really some separation now. Top six teams in the Big 12, all over 500 in the league, with three teams at 8-7, OK State, Texas, and Baylor. And then the bottom four teams all significantly under 500 in the league. We really thought that either Kansas State, we definitely thought Kansas State, we thought maybe Oklahoma had a shot, especially after they went to UCLA and split the first two games and played well early. Maybe one of those two teams had a shot. Right now, both those teams have played their way out of regional consideration. Those top six teams have played their way in. I think if there's a breakout club out of those bottom three, I would argue it's Oklahoma State. They're playing really well. They're playing their best baseball right now, as evidenced by the series wins back-to-back, like you said, against Nebraska and then Missouri. But Texas and Baylor, it's going to be interesting. Those three teams play each other the next 3 weeks. We'll see how things go down the stretch in the Big 12. But the trends are down for Texas, and that's why we hit Texas eight spots, whereas otherwise you probably wouldn't have hit a team. If you take that in a vacuum and they, you know, number 12 goes to number 8 and loses 2 or 3, you usually don't drop them 8 spots. But I thought that deserved a little. It was a good entrepot into talking about the rest of the Big 12. Let's talk about the Southeastern Conference a little bit, Aaron, before we take a podcast question and then get out of here. Highest-ranked SEC team this week is 13, Georgia, correct?
Yes. Georgia, I think, last week as well, I believe.
I think we think that the SEC is a league with a lot of good teams and no great team. And that Georgia clearly has established itself best non-conference schedule in that league and best record now in the league. I don't think those two things are coincidental. I think Georgia prepared itself before league play started, and they are a veteran team. They were ready to take the experience from losing some of those tough games early and apply that to winning tough games in conference. But South Carolina with a big bounce-back weekend, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, starting to get themselves back up off the turf and playing well again.
And I think all four of those teams are really good clubs. And honestly, I think that by the end of the year, I still believe Ole Miss will emerge as the elite team in that league because I still think they're the most balanced club, although Georgia is also very balanced. I mean, the common denominator between Georgia and Ole Miss is they both have a lot of pitching.
Right.
And we're seeing that, like you said, bear fruits now. But Georgia, I mean, those two teams have kind of taken a stranglehold in their respective divisions now. Mississippi, I believe, has a three-game lead in the West, and Georgia has a three-game lead in the East. So I'm very curious, John, for that Ole Miss-South Carolina series coming up this weekend. I'm planning to get down there, actually.
Awesome.
So I think that's going to be a big one, especially in the Eastern Division standings, because that's
crazy.
It's just a cluster after Georgia with South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee all at 9-6. Tennessee's kind of the club that's flying under the radar here.
Yeah.
Winning series every week, it seems like.
Just grinding things out in Todd Rowley fashion. You got to have a lot of respect for the job that Todd Rowley's
done. What a great hire that was.
I think it was. Nothing against Rod Delmonico, but really, in a lot of ways, Todd Rowley's kind of the anti-Rod Delmonico. It's a little bit more of a grinder mentality, a little bit less of a flashy mentality. I'm going to guess that South Florida is not going to be where he recruits the majority of his impact players from. That's just a guess. Yeah. Todd Rowley's going to be a little bit more about Tennessee kids and SEC kids. He's going to compete with other SEC schools for a lot of the same players as opposed to competing maybe with Miami or those kind of schools, or South Florida, Florida Atlantic for talent. I just think he's a grinder mentality that really is well-suited to Tennessee and very well-suited to the Southeastern Conference. I just see no reason why another Jack Leggett, spawn of Jack Leggett, is not going to be a really good coach in the SEC. There are three of them now, and they're all pretty good. But the SEC standings are so wild, Aaron, to see the entire East. We have five teams from the SEC ranked. They're all from the East. Actually, I guess we have four. Georgia, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. Kentucky, sixth place in the SEC East. They're number 25 in our rankings. We banged them eight spots after losing this week. I'd say no team is can we rank with less enthusiasm than Kentucky. They still are 26-8, but 7-8 in the league. They gotta show us something.
That is the
hollowest
26-8, John. That you won't find anywhere in the top 25.
Their 26-8 is akin to Russ Moldenauer of Texas. It's 326, kind of an empty 326. It's kind of an empty 26-8. We really couldn't find another team to rank ahead of them. Was the problem? We couldn't settle on another team that deserved to be in the top 25 ahead of Kentucky, Kentucky.
And I thought there were a lot of similarities between Kentucky this week and Virginia last week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Both feasted on really poor non-conference schedules, padded those resumes, got into the rankings pretty high, and then kind of have fallen on their faces on the road in conference. That's been the big thing, is neither of those teams. Virginia has a hard time winning away from its spacious little pitching and defense environment there.
Right.
Kentucky can't win away from its little bandbox. I mean, it seems like. And in conference, they've lost at Auburn, at South Carolina, at Georgia. I am not enthusiastic at all about Kentucky.
Getting swept at Georgia is pretty bad. I think the fact that we had Georgia ranked so high is why I didn't feel comfortable completely running them out of the top 25. They were competitive in two of the three games. Georgia is better. I think Georgia established it was better. Just couldn't quite run Kentucky all the way out, even though their overall resume is not that impressive. But obviously, there's just no easy weekend in the SEC. But it's actually for Kentucky.
I mean, what's Kentucky's best win? I mean, they sweep Alabama at home, 2-3 against Mississippi State. Those are the two weakest teams in the SEC. I mean, before that, they've got nothing in the non-conference. I'm just not very enthusiastic about Kentucky.
And the best thing that Kentucky did basically was they scored a ton of runs early. And like you said, it's their band box. And they did score some runs when they were down at in Mobile, Alabama, for that tournament. But it's just not. It's almost impossible to gauge still how good this Kentucky team is because they haven't played well against a good team. I mean, that kind of tells you how good they are. But to me, basically a 500 team in the SEC. Playing pretty good SEC teams is a top 25 team, but it's a back of the top 25 team. The real question for them is how are their guys like the Sawyer Carrolls and the Colin Calgos of the world going to hold up against better pitching?
I have more confidence in that than I do in Scott Green, who has just been incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, he has been. Their whole pitching staff just hasn't been that good.
It really
hasn't been that good. So it's going to be interesting to see where Kentucky goes from here, but they are the bubbliest of bubble teams. It's a Baseball America podcast. He's Aaron. I'm John. Aaron, we finally brought in your personal cheese ball. Pepperdine comes in at 23. They've been really like the perpetual number 26. They're in the rankings this week. East Carolina back in the rankings at 24. UNCW drops out. Let's finish up a little bit with a little Big West talk. We haven't talked any West Coast at all yet. What was the most significant thing in the West Coast for you this weekend? Was it Long Beach State falling out of the top 25, a team that just has lost 11-13, just is in a total meltdown right now. I know a lot of it was on the road, but the lose at home this weekend at Irvine.
That was shocking, John, because I really thought Long Beach would rally at home this weekend. And you know, I've been trying to get a feel for Long Beach. I was talking to people on the West Coast this week just to say, what do you think about these guys? And people are saying, don't worry about Long Beach. They're a good club. They're going to be fine. I think people expected them to beat Irvine, as good as Irvine is, and I've become convinced that Irvine is very good.
Yeah, me too.
They're a better offensive team than Long Beach, and you know what? Their pitching has been more consistent. Even with Scott Gorgon not at his peak
Zenith,
level,
yeah.
He was better earlier in the year. He's still winning this week anyway. And Bryce Stoll and Daniel Babona have been outstanding on Saturdays and Sundays.
But to say Daniel Babona as well. Very fun.
But Long Beach, man, I don't know what's going on out there. I guess, you know, we knew all year long that scoring runs could be a problem for them. We thought they'd be a little bit better at preventing runs.
I think. That's correct.
That's the bottom line.
Well, I'll tell you what. They better get better the next two weekends. They're at Northridge and they're at home to Pacific. If they don't win 6 out of 6, honestly, they're going to be in trouble for a regional bid. If they go 4-2, they go 2-1 in both those series. Let's just think out loud. And they're 6-6 in the league. And they're home to UCSB, which is decent, at Cal Poly, which is better than its record, but really still not that good of a record.
At Davis, too, you skipped.
And that's the thing. They have two really tough series left, at Davis, home to Fullerton. They better win the four series that they're going to be favored in.
Yeah.
Because they're already 2-4 in the league and only 19-14 overall. It's a very difficult schedule. I'm sure their RPI is good and all that mess. But they have to win the series where they're really favored. Because Davis is going to be tough. UC Davis is my new personal cheese ball. That team can really pitch. Got some decent offense. They were prepared. They're kind of like Florida State coming into the ACC in basketball in 1991-92. They don't have Sam Cassell. They're not that good. But they're good. They were ready. They geared up as a program for entrance into the Big West. And you have to respect the job that program has done to be ready for this.
Sure.
And then when they end the season against Fullerton, boy, Long Beach State better be playing better than they are now, because you're just not going to get it done. 19-14 overall. I don't care how tough your schedule is; you just can't go 2-11. It's brutal. So UC Davis, shockingly, 5-1, atop the Big West.
Right, and Fullerton, I think, is still positioned the best in that league. Having won at Irvine, I mean, they're 6-3 in the league. And you know, I mean, a little bit sloppy this week for Fullerton. I mean, against, you know, they take 2 out of 3 against Cal State Northridge and nearly blow a 14-2 lead on Sunday. Not the most impressive way to win a series against Northridge, but I still think Fullerton is probably in the best shape.
I agree, and you just have to respect the job that Mike Gillespie and those guys have done at UC Irvine this year. Just remarkable, and the job that Dave Serrano has done coming into Fullerton. Those are not his players, quote-unquote, you know, coming in with a lot of guys who are new to him, and just done a great job. Dave Serrano, you know, we should never, ever doubt Dave Serrano. And guess what? We never do. We've given him 2 coaching awards, so we think he's pretty good. So we think Fullerton's pretty good, too. Especially, I think they're playing a little bit above their talent this year. So, kudos to those guys. And speaking of talent, UCLA and Arizona still not ranked. So, let's take one quick podcast question before we wrap it up. I guess what we'll do is this one from Travis Washburn, sent last week. Thank you so much for the college podcast. He's an App State grad, and he just made some App State jokes, which is always good. He appreciated me lobbying for the App State Wake Forest football renewal, which is good. But he comes to a lot of North Carolina games. He's talking about that kind of stuff. And so he says, comments about Long Beach State and Virginia. We've talked about their home field advantage, Aaron. Do we think that the USA baseball facility, which is bigger than the Boschmer Stadium, is affecting UNC this year in their home games? Because they do have a lot of midweek home losses. They aren't scoring a ton of runs at home. They lost this week, midweek, to Elon, 2-0. Do we think that North Carolina's one-year change of venue is affecting them? And in a way, I guess I would say probably, because they're just not at home. Sure. They're playing all their games are basically kind of road games. You know, NC State did this back in 2002 or 2003. I forget what year it was, where they were the Dale Park Doak Field was being reconstructed. They played at 6 different home sites. At least North Carolina's playing in one, and it's a very nice site.
Yeah.
But how do you think that's affecting North Carolina? Because I do think they're less of a pitching and defense team, more of a pitching and offense team than a pitching and defense team.
No, I think that's a great way to put it, John, actually. Pitching and offense team. You know, I agree. I think it's clearly it's suppressed their offense a little bit at home. It's a tough park to hit home runs. It's not an easy park to score runs. I mean, you should be able to find the gaps, and they've done that. They've hit some doubles. But, you know, I mean, I do think that they're built more to play at Boschmer.
I just think it's always tough when you're not at your home park, so especially early.
Yeah,
I think it's always tough. But like you said, they have some pretty nice left-handed bats. That's how you recruit to Boschmer Stadium. It's a 355 to right center field.
Yeah,
at least it used to be. We'll see what it is in the new ballpark. Understand, Peter Gammons probably has something to do with designing the new park. He at least helped raise the money. But I do think it affects them. Are they better than their 29-7 mark? I guess as we started talking ACC, Aaron. We'll finish with the podcast.
I think they're right where they should be. I think they're a solid club. They're certainly one of the best clubs in the country. But I mean, every time I've seen them, I haven't been overwhelmed with them. I don't think they're as good as they were the last 2 years.
And of course, we said last year they weren't as good as they were in 06. So, and they still got back to the finals.
Yeah, but I mean, last year I think I think they had a lot more on offense and defense. Really, I mean, the key thing with North Carolina is they've got so many veterans. It kind of makes them slump proof. I think they don't go into extended funks because they've got so many guys who've been there, and they've got a lot of depth on the mound and enough firepower. I guess the biggest question I have with them is the defense, and
right.
I think that's going to be. The question that kind of lingers with them, especially, I guess, up the middle of the infield in particular. So
yeah, they don't put up the big numbers that Arizona State does, but in some ways, Mike Fox's clubs are kind of like Arizona State's clubs. Arizona State always pitches better than you think, and they hit the bejesus out of the ball. And they are kind of slump-proof because they are so offensive.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Fox's teams have always been pretty good offensive ball clubs over North Carolina.
Kyle Seager
having a huge weekend.
That guy has had a huge year.
He has had a huge year.
A little bit under the radar because Dustin Ackley's reigning freshman of the year gets a lot of attention.
And he should because Dustin Ackley is a stud.
But Kyle Seager leads the ACC in RBIs, I believe, with 48.
That is unbelievable.
He had that 27-game hitting streak recently come to an end. I mean, he has been one of the best players in the ACC. Right now, I think he's got a case for ACC Player of the Year, and I know that probably sounds a little strange with all the big names in the ACC, particularly in Miami. But What's he hitting, 397, John, now?
Six homers, 48 ribeyes, 20 doubles is impressive. Again, taking advantage of those gaps, like you said. But the reason I say that I will compare North Carolina a little bit to Arizona State is 166 walks. When they steal bases, they steal efficiently. It's a 401 team on base percentage. They've always been a grinded-out mentality as a lineup. Difficult at bats. That's why guys like Matt Spencer didn't play in North Carolina. He gave away too many at bats. That's why Seth Williams always plays, because he's a grinder. He grinds through at bats. Mm-hmm. That's Mike Fox's kind of player, if I may be so bold as to try to read the mind of Mike Fox. But I think you have to respect the North Carolina program. They are kind of slub-proof. You had to respect them anyway. They went to Omaha back-to-back years and lost in the championship series. But this team doesn't really have a star you peg it to. And yet, still very impressive. Their two best players are sophomores in Alex White and Dustin Ackley. And this team just continues to grind it out. And Miami and Florida State are combined 61-6, and they're getting all the attention. But guess which is the team that's been to Omaha the last 2 years? North Cackalack. You know, Florida State hasn't been to Omaha since 2000. I think that to expect North Carolina to fall short of Omaha is almost a little folly. And it might be interesting to see how they do with that home field advantage or not advantage in a regional at Cary at USA Baseball's training complex.
One thing they're going to need also is I think they're going to need Matt Harvey to pitch a little bit better down the stretch. He's been scuffling a little bit on Sundays now, so something to keep an eye on. And my final thought, John, about the ACC.
Longest podcast ever. That's okay, though.
You know.
It's actually not. We've done longer.
Miami, Florida State coming up this weekend.
I don't really have
any thoughts beyond that. But
that used to be the best series in college baseball, because when Miami was an independent, Florida State and Miami played back-to-back. One series in Tallahassee, one in Coral Gables. It was awesome. It was by far the best series in college baseball. Of course, it helped. They matched up in the 99 championship game. Blair Varnes pitched it on one leg, Amy Poehler style. It was an awesome championship game. Marshall McDougal goes deep. Miami wins at 6-5. Kevin Brown, 4 RBIs. That, to me, is the pinnacle of that series, of that rivalry, those two teams. You had the coaching ties. Jim Morris used to coach for Mike Martin. You had the fact that Turtle Thomas always stirred the pot. Those teams recruited against each other. You had Florida State having the signals, Miami signs, and being busted for having those signs. You have all the accusations of Miami stealing signs. I mean, these two programs have all this awesome history, football, baseball, whatever. They used to play six times a year. I love that series. It's lost a little bit with Miami coming into the ACC, but what a great weekend series that'll be. One, I think it's three. I think that's going to be your meaningful matchup this weekend.
It's a safe bet, John.
I wish I were there for that one, but you'll be at Ole Miss, South Carolina. That sounds good. I'll probably be hanging out with my three-year-old and my six-month-old, but that's good too. He's Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week for the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.